HPCO and host of our podcast series. And I wanted to welcome you to today's webinar on end-of-life doulas and how important they are. I am honored to introduce the chair of NHPCO's End-of-Life Doula Advisory Council, Deanna Cochran, and she will introduce the rest of the faculty. But before I do that, I just want to let our audience know that NHPCO's 2019 Interdisciplinary Conference will be in Orlando, Florida, at the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. We have a great collection of pre-conference seminars on November 2nd and 3rd, and the main conference is November 4th and 6th, with a wealth of educational content and networking opportunities. The advanced registration rates available through October 8th, so I hope you'll consider joining us in Orlando. You can learn more and find online registration at nhpco.org/IDC2019. Now, on with our webinar. Deanna Cochran, RN, is an early voice in the end-of-life doula movement and an Amazon best-selling author. She founded Quality of Life Care in 2005. She educates about palliative care, trains and certifies doulas, and develops doula programs within hospice. She's honored to be with us today as chair of the NHPCO End-of-Life Doula Advisory Council. Deanna?
Thank you very much, John, and we welcome all of you here from the council, all the people that could not be here with us today. It's a very rich and wonderful environment trying to discuss, discussing about how to bring the information about doulas to everybody and to the hospices and the palliative care organizations and to the public. So today we wanted to come out and talk to people in the world, the people, families, caregivers. We also are so happy that many hospices employees are here. So the first thing I'd like to do is introduce Mary Lynn, Elua, and Arlene, and then I would like to ask you a question just to start out. We're curious today. So Mary Lynn Rush, will you raise your hand, Mary Lynn, so they know, holds a Master of Science degree in Hospice and Palliative Studies and founded Lifespan Doulas, End-of-Life Doula Training. Previously, she was a hospice nurse and birth midwife and is president of the National End-of-Life Doula Alliance. Elua, will you raise your hand? Elua Arthur is an end-of-life doula, attorney, and founder of Going with Grace, an end-of-life planning, training, and support organization, which supports people to grow closer relationships with their deaths and be a guiding presence to others through the process. And Arlene, will you raise your hand? Arlene Steputat is an end-of-life doula and a seasoned volunteer manager for the last 10 years within hospice. And so we welcome all of you today and all of you that are joining us. So I'm going to share the screen so you can see our presentation. Let me get to it starting. Here we go. So what are end-of-life doulas and how can they help me and our family? And here we are. And so the objectives today are we're going to define what an end-of-life doula is. We're going to talk about hospice team roles. We're going to talk about the differentiation of an overlap of the team versus end-of-life doulas, the training of various roles, what end-of-life doulas do, and how to find and select, and the benefits and costs. So that's what we're going to go over today. So I'd like to start with, though, if you would please put in the chat. Arlene is going to be manning the chat for us today. And if you would please put in there the answer to this question. Are you a family caregiver? Or are you representing hospice? And what role are you if you are? Are you a hospice nurse, a CNA, a caregiver, a volunteer? Please share with us in the chat what it is, how you're involved, and why you're interested. Just basically caregiver or, yeah. Thank you so much for participating in this. We want to make this very valuable for you, so we do want to know who's here. Okay, so I'm going to go on. All right, so let's go with the definition of an end-of-life doula right now. Let me go ahead and talk about that. Where I'm going to give you the definition that we agreed on in the End-of-Life Doula Advisory Council. There's several trainers and several people in there that have an interest in this. And so we had different ideas about what an end-of-life doula is. That's in fact part of the problem. Ido Banak, who's the CEO of NHPCO, told us we have the same problem that hospices have in that we need to be better at branding exactly what are we and what are we doing so that people understand and we're not calling ourselves 100 different things and doing 100 different things. So what we agreed on in the council was this: end-of-life doulas are non-medical companions to the dying and their families. Doulas do not take the place of hospice personnel. Rather, they complement other services that a dying person and their family may be receiving, including hospice or palliative care. They provide a wide range of holistic services, including physical, emotional, spiritual, and practical support. End-of-life doulas may work with families from initial diagnosis through bereavement. So that, in essence, it's a long definition, but we wanted to make sure that we included the various components of an end-of-life doula that most people would agree is what we do. Okay, so let me move on to the next. So hospice team roles, physicians, home health aides, and all of this you can see, chaplains, social workers, bereavement, volunteers. And some hospice programs do have end-of-life doula program within the volunteer program. Most people don't, but there are some that are innovative and progressive and have heard of it and want to do it. So these are the roles within hospice. And if an end-of-life doula is within a hospice program, like in the end-of-life doula program, they're just another element to the volunteer program. And the volunteer program breaks up the services in many ways. There, a volunteer might want to serve in the office. There might be a volunteer who wants to serve in the home, say Thursdays from 4 to 8. There's volunteers that want to do vigil services where they want to sit vigil when somebody's actively dying. And the end-of-life doula differs in this in within a volunteer program in that they bridge most of them. This is very innovative and new, so not everybody does it the same way, but mostly it's the end-of-life doula bridges the services from before, during, and after death. That's one thing that makes them very unique. And another thing is they're also being called in on crisis situations when people are admitted and it's very fast, everything's moving very fast, they can be called into there as well and help before, during, and after death. The differentiation of end-of-life doulas from the hospice team, you can see here, the hospice team, of course, is planning the medical care, and it's a Medicare benefit that our government pays for. They're licensed roles: physician, social worker, chaplain, nurse, certified CNAs. All of these roles are certified. The volunteers, they must abide by the same roles that the employees of a hospice do. They have to go through the same screening that hospice employees have to go through. And they're clearly defined roles state by state. And they provide clinical care. So the doulas, they are just an adjunct. They're a companion role to hospice. So they're there to help reinforce teaching, spend the time that perhaps the hospice doesn't have. Hospice is not a caregiving agency. Some doulas are caregivers as well. Doulas are, they're not a Medicare benefit. The family will pay for it, or the hospice will pay for the services by training them as volunteers, and they volunteer their service. There's no national board that regulates, as opposed to the hospice employees are all licensed. And the skill set may be different depending on that person's training and their life and what they bring to the table. Like you could see just here on this panel, Elu is an attorney. Mary Lynn and I are both hospice nurses, but she also has birth midwifery behind her. Like Arlene has volunteer coordinator management experience within hospice. So there, people bring different things to the table, but we have a basic understanding of what we all do, you know? So, and then we provide practical non-medical care. The team provides the clinical care. And here's where we overlap. So emotional, spiritual care, I've had some people say, well, you're providing spiritual care. You're trying to take over the role of the hospice chaplain. How could that be? And that's not what's happening at all. What's happening is that end-of-life doulas are just being that presence. And many people refer to that companioning presence as spiritual support, because it is a holistic endeavor, mind, body, spirit, emotion, energy. So the doula is there providing that container, helping to stabilize with the hospice team. We're reinforcing what they're teaching, and we're just there in that capacity. It's not that we're licensed therapists or chaplains. We do end of life vigil support together. We do planning and guidance. So an end-of-life doula might be working with a family before they're on hospice and bringing them into hospice sooner. And then, of course, the hospice team will be taking over the planning. A doula might be helping a family prepare for celebrations and memorials and funerals. The social worker does that within the hospice team. But maybe the family wants that doula to actually do the service. You know, they'll work together on that. Ceremony, funeral planning, bereavement care. So the doula is not a licensed therapist who's doing bereavement support groups, unless that doula happens to be a licensed therapist doing that. Otherwise, we're companioning people after death, before, during, and after death in a layperson capacity. Eloa? Okay, so the training of the hospice team and the doulas. The physicians, of course, go to medical school, have a license. Nursing, same thing. Social workers, same thing. They must go to school, get a license. Chaplains, same thing. They also have an extensive background they need to do to become Masters of Divinity. Volunteer, they need to have Medicare-mandated training and supervision. And like I said, they need to be the same as employees as far as their background and getting in. CNAs have state-required certification. An end-of-life doula within a hospice team has to meet the same volunteer standards that the others do, and then they'll get additional in-depth training for the doula role. End-of-life doula in the community, there's no national regulatory board for that role. However, the people that come into it may have licenses, they may not, like nurse and social worker and all that. Many people don't, but they have other expertise like massage therapy or Reiki or acupuncture or chiropractic. They have other things that they bring to the table besides their doula skills. And now it's time for Eloa. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deanna. That's a great place to get started on different trainings and different training organizations, because as Deanna just mentioned, so many people that come to this role are coming with their whole selves. They're coming with their entire backgrounds, with all the trainings that they've ever received, which means that the doula training is really an opportunity to support the already ingrained skills and talents that the individual has. Trainings are offered by a variety of individuals and organizations, but at the base of it all, no matter the background that the person is teaching from, the base is to teach the fundamental skills and knowledge of the doula. Some training programs are run by individuals with healthcare backgrounds. Others come from a spiritual support background, and others, like myself, come from a practical and legal background. So the trainer is adding their level of expertise, what they had before, to the training to teach other people how to do this work. Doulas are typically drawn to one trainer or another based on who knows what, but it's really useful for doulas to get trained, I believe, by a variety of organizations to make sure that they're getting a cross-section of the offerings and the different teaching styles. Additionally, also to get a cross-section of how to offer the particular skills. When it comes to the delivery of trainings and models, they happen in a variety of ways. Some happen in person, some happen online. Some are weekends, some are comprehensive, dedicated 12-week, 16-week courses. Most, at the root of it all, contain a handbook or some ongoing resource for the doulas to use after the training is over. Most offer a certificate when you're done with the course, which means that you've completed the program but doesn't speak to any other larger certification. It just affirms that you've finished the requirements for that particular training program. There, as Deanna mentioned, there's currently no national or state regulation of doulas at all, but there are several ways where we are working to create some professional standards in our work. Next slide, please, Deanna. So So doulas come with an array of services, as you can probably imagine, based on all that we just described before. One of the major things to remember is that the services that we offer do vary from doula to doula. We're all trained differently, but at the root of it all is companionship, support and empowerment of the dying person, and to support and empower the circle of support, be it family, paid caregivers, friends, distant relatives, etc. So while our services themselves differ, we all at the root do the same thing, which is companioning. Some of the doulas do advanced care planning. I'm sure most of you know what that is, as I was looking through where you come from, what your backgrounds are. Some of us do life review. Some do respite care overnight. Others do household support, such as practical things like rides and childcare and pet care. A few do logistical needs and support, like questions that we get all the time or I get often. That might stem from my background as an attorney, but some of it is also just very practical. What do we do with all this medication after the death occurs? One thing that I think you'll notice that we are not doing is any medical support at all. We're not doing any medical care. That's what the medical team is very, very good for. That's what they're there for. And so we fully rely on them for that. I want to reinforce here that our role is to reinforce the palliative care concepts and to provide emotional support through that. We are useful all the time, but particularly in high need times where the dying seems to be imminent, or there's a lot of practical needs that have come up. Stuff needs to get done and they need somebody to walk them through the process. They need somebody to walk alongside with them as they figure it out. One of the, I'd say the key component of our services is our time. Our role is to support as much as we can, which means that we're available to support the family when need be. Okay, next slide, please. Thank you. There's a number of different service models for how we're out there in the world doing our work. What I want to start with is the community doula. This is the one that most of us have become most familiar with. The person who's out there in the community, known in the neighborhoods, known in the community as somebody who's doing some end of life work. This person is largely doing a lot of educating the public about our role, educating about options around death and dying, educating about death and dying overall. That person is really out there and it's begun to be known by the people around that this is the work that they do. That means that when time comes, when a family is in need, they say, hey, I know this person, and then we get a phone call about it. We often work independently, or sometimes we're working in a hospice, but we'll talk about that later. But sometimes we're also working in collectives. There's a bunch of great models for collectives that are emerging right now. I think it's really incredible to think of community doulas banding together to make sure that they're able to provide support in whatever somebody might need, because all the doulas are coming with their various skills and backgrounds and trainings. While, as I mentioned, they all have the same fundamental basis of learning, we all have strengths in different areas. So collectives are a great way for individuals and families to know that they're being supported holistically. We're contacted directly by the family. So I get a phone call that says, my brother is looking like it's nearing the end of his life, or the doctor said, what do we do now? So we're contacted directly. In the example that I just gave you, part of my role is to provide information and resources. Oftentimes, a community doula is helping families actually get into hospice. So we're catching families a bit further upstream. There's also the hospice doula. And the hospice doula works within the hospice and within a distinct program as an added layer of support to the team. Some of the hospice doulas I know sit in IDT meetings, interdisciplinary team meetings, when their client is up to protect HIPAA and make sure that everything is right there. They come in as an added layer of support, doing marketing forms, scheduling vigils, doing trainings, educating hospice staff on how to further benefit families, having difficult conversations, mediating family conversations. The hospice doula is up in the hospice team as an adjunct, as an additional layer of support, where the RNCM, the registered nurse case manager, when that person needs an added layer of support, the doula can step in and do that. a lot of times Hospice Doula is also working with families doing early education on the end of life, answering questions and referring back to the medical team when possible. I'd also like to add here that a lot of hospice doulas I know are supplementing care plans in that one, the registered nurse case manager might come to the doula and say, these are the things that we're already working on. What are you seeing on your end? What are you seeing when you're with them? And so we're able to provide additional information for that case manager to fill out the care plan. Lastly, just addressing remuneration efforts. Most of us at this point are fee-for-service, which means that we're getting paid directly by the family or the circle of support. Some hospice doulas are paid by the hospice itself, oftentimes as an adjunct therapy. For those of us that are working directly with the families, mostly community doulas, we've set our own fees, and we get very clear upfront what the charge for the services are, and we often execute a contract or a good faith agreement for services, so everybody's on the same page. It's very clear what the exchange will be. These are the services I will offer, and this is how much I'll get paid for those services. Some are volunteer, so some are coming in and just offering services because they're needed, but there are others of us that are offering it for fee for service. So there's lots to consider when thinking about selecting a doula, and Mary Lynn is going to talk to us about some of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Elua, and thank you, Deanna, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. It's thrilling to be here with you. I plan to address some of the issues that families might face when they are considering working with a doula, and I know a lot of you on the call are actually hospice professionals, but this is going to be mostly addressing what a family would be looking for in an end-of-life doula, which will also help you all to understand what an end-of-life doula is. So I'm going to divide my answer to talking about what to look for in a doula into three different sections. I'm going to talk about logistics, and then I'm going to talk about background, and then I'm going to talk about philosophy. So basically, if you're working with a doula, you need help figuring out what it is you're looking for, and you need help to know how available that doula is going to be to you. So you need to ask things like, do they work with anybody else? Are they on call 100% of the time? Are they on call at all? Or are they working alone and have limitations? How can they be reached? How long does it take them to get back to you? What is their availability? What hours do they work? Do they do overnight? Do they do shift work? Do they consider that they are going to schedule visits with you way ahead of time? Or are those going to be more spontaneous? Or is there a difference between when you're working with somebody early on and what you might arrange to do with the family when active dying is happening? So that's some of the logistical things you want to look at. And then you want to consider what their background and training is. How are they trained? Are they trained through experience? Do they have a lot of experience, or is it mostly book learning? Are they a member of any organizations? What other trainings do they have? Like we've been talking about how a lot of people come to this work after having been a nurse or a social worker or a massage therapist or a chaplain or even a hospice administrator. And you want to think about what other skills and services they bring to this work. And you want to think about the cost as well. And that's a big question. So doulas, I'm going to talk about cost more, but I want to talk a little bit about the services that they provide. There's no one size fits all. Doulas bring their own background and philosophy and ancillary skills to being an end-of-life doula. The skills that they have, is that what you're looking for? So are you looking for somebody with more like a philosophy that meshes with yours, or is it more important that they have the most academic training possible? Are you looking for somebody with a real spiritual bent, or somebody who's more on the practical side of things? All of these things that I've been mentioning should be tempered with how well you know the person and your gut feeling about them and how much you have in common. So for example, if you know someone who has used a particular doula, or if a doula is a member of your faith community, that may be more important to you than whatever certification or training they may have. Likewise, if the doula happens to be a family member or a close friend, you may not feel comfortable asking them to do certain things or sharing certain information or concerns. So you have the final say, and these are all the things that you need to take into account. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about how to find an end-of-life doula. The first thing I recommend is doing a Google search. Sorry, tripping over my words here. A Google search in your area or your state. If you just put in Michigan, where I'm from, end-of-life doula, see what comes up. You probably get in touch with the training organization that way, and you can then go to that training organization and see if they can recommend a doula. There's also national organizations, and those may have the most comprehensive directories or listings of the doulas that are out there, not dependent on if they took a particular training or not. So you'll find a lot more variety if you're going to one of those national organizations that's inclusive and diverse. And then the other thing you can do is go to different healthcare providers, hospice organizations, palliative care organizations, senior centers, and things like that, and ask if they know of any end-of-life doulas in the area. However, as was already mentioned, we're just in the stages of educating people about end-of-life doulas, and they may not know, first of all, what an end-of-life doula is or how to find one. So you might be educating each other if you go that route. Another thing to consider is that just Googling for news articles is a helpful thing to do, because there's been a lot coming out in the news lately. Everything from Next Avenue, Yes, Hospice News, New York Times, AARP, lots of different online sources are giving out information or producing information about end-of-life doulas. So that's something you might find as in your Google search as well. Next slide, please. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the benefits of having an end-of-life doula. You probably, as you've been hearing all that we've been saying, been putting together for yourself some examples in your mind of where you think maybe a doula could have been very helpful. And you might be thinking that you wish there was one in your area. I would like to just talk a little bit about all of these elements that are listed here on the slide come under the sort of broad category of the doula model of care. A model of care is a particular way of delivering services to a population. And the doula model of care has been developed over the last 40 years by birth and postpartum doulas, and is evidence-based and been practiced for a long time and has been honed. And end-of-life doulas have been able to borrow from that model and apply it to end-of-life. So end-of-life doulas, specifically in that doula model of care, are team players with a specialized role. They have special training, and they may overlap with other people that are providing services at end of life, as we've been talking about, but they practice with this particular attitude of coming into the home and supporting people and taking them where they're at in a non-judgmental way, and being curious about what the values are in that family and helping that family figure out what's best for them. So doulas don't bring in meaning. They help the family have meaningful experiences themselves. We're asking questions, and we're like chameleons in a way. We're leaving our shoes at the door. We're taking people where they're at. And then we're using a family-centered approach to address all realms, physical, spiritual, emotional. So doulas provide an extra layer of support. And they, as we've mentioned, are non-clinical and non-judgmental and supporting the client's values. So as you can imagine, the benefits would be that if the family is contacting the doula directly and working out the services with them, they have immediate access. That's something to be worked out. How immediate is that access? But the doula will be very available to them. And we've talked a lot about the kinds of things that doulas do, everything from practical assistance with, you know, childcare, running errands, providing rides, light housekeeping. But in essence, the companionship and the presence is one of the key things. That, in addition to providing hands-on comfort measures, doulas can help form a circle of support. Elua used that term, helping the family identify who is in their circle of support and helping to call on them and organize that kind of support. So many times when families are overwhelmed, they just don't even know where to begin, and they don't even know how many people want to help, and people say they want to help and then they don't know how to put them to work. So the doula can be somebody who can help them in organizing, making the most of community resources, helping them figure out where to go for more help, and informing them and then helping get them into palliative care and hospice sooner. I think that's one of the biggest benefits of doula care. We're just beginning some budding research efforts to come up with more evidence-based ideas about the benefits of doula care. And if it turns out to be anything like the research that's been done on birth and postpartum doulas, we know that research is going to reveal that end-of-life doulas help the dying individual and the family have a more peaceful experience. Let's see, I'm looking at my notes here to see if I covered everything I wanted to say about that. And I think I'm ready to move on to the next slide. It's so variable what an end-of-life doula costs. It depends on where you live, whether it's urban or rural, east or west coast or in the middle. But one kind of rule of thumb is to look around your area and see what birth and postpartum doulas cost in your area. So keep in mind that most community doulas are self-employed and expect the rates to vary based on their level of experience, their certification status, what services they provide, and especially the geographic area. They may charge an hourly fee. They may charge a fee based on a particular service or a package of services, and they may have a different fee for like overnight hours sitting vigil. A package of services for a birth or postpartum doula can run anywhere from like $700 to $1,500. And so I think that might be similar to what a lot of end-of-life doulas are putting together. But I think it's more common at this point for end-of-life doulas to be charging an hourly fee. And I think that would range anywhere, what I've heard, from $25 to $50 on average. And then something like $50 to $150 for a consultation. Some people are doing a free initial consultation, but when they come back to provide specific services such as advanced care planning, life review work like a legacy project or purposeful dialogue, or they're doing a general info session or an educational consultation, they might apply a certain consultation fee to that. And then another thing that the family needs to do when they're talking with the doula about costs is ask, does that include phone support, email? And then is there a difference between on-call, overnight, or continuous support? Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you very much, Mary Lynn and Elua. Let's go to another poll right now, please. If you would just let us know in the chat box. We are going to be breaking right now for Q&A. Arlene is going to step up and she's going to announce questions, some of the most common questions that she's been receiving in the chat. And one of us will answer them round robin style. So if you would right now just write in the chat, did you find this webinar helpful? And what so far has been your biggest takeaway from the presentation? And then please feel free to ask questions in the chat and Arlene will bring them forward to us. Arlene, are you available?
I am here and I actually have several questions that have come up during your talk.
Okay.
So while people are answering, maybe you can answer them. So the first question is, does a person need to go through a background check to be an end-of-life doula?
Take it away, Mary Lynn, and then Alua, and then I. We'll just go like that.
So background checks are pretty much mandatory for all healthcare providers now and many other people in a new job, but end-of-life doulas are working independently. They're like an independent contractor in most cases, and at least community doulas are. I would assume that if somebody's working through a hospice, they would have had a background check. But that's a good question for a family member to ask of an independent community doula, because there's no overarching agency that they've set up a business with. So it would be a more personal relationship, and you might want to ask them if they would be willing to do a background check for you.
Okay. Second question. How do we overcome the fear of a hospice staff, such as the case manager, the therapists, you know, the nurses, to become part of the team instead of being viewed as competition? Because there's some pushback with some roles from some hospices about what a doula, that they might usurp someone's role. So how do doulas integrate into a hospice team in a way that makes everybody feel like they're a member of the team?
I think this would probably be a really useful question for you, Deanna, as your former hospice.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. So what I'll tell you what I share with people all the time is if people understand, and a lot of times hospice workers don't understand the role of a doula, and that we totally know our place. I think it's about knowing our place, that we're not planned care providers, we're actually support. And we wanna help the hospice as well as the family. I can't tell you how many times when I've been with a family as a doula, they love it when they realize, oh, it's you again. You help us. Like, they feel like I'm helping them as well as the family. We are, I think Arlene, Alua brought up about being another set of eyes and ears, like the volunteer. We're just another set of a heart, hands, eyes that help. And we're not trying to be chaplains or social workers or nurses or physicians at all. So I think that's the biggest thing, is as end-of-life doulas come onto the scene, we need to educate people about actually what our role is and that it's complementary. It's not in a leadership role with the medical team. And then as families understand that, as doulas share that information, as hospice workers understand that, I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Next question. Do doulas specialize in specific age groups?
Alua?
I know a few doulas that specialize in age groups. But by and large, I think most of us are just directly responding to the need before us. There are several doulas that I've trained that work primarily with children in pediatric, and others I know that work specifically with Alzheimer's and dementia. So age is perhaps only when it talks about children does it really come into play. But then also there are doulas that are working with specific disease processes.
Okay. Another question. So if an end-of-life doula is integrated into a hospice team, who does the supervision of that person?
Mary Lynn?
That might be a good question for you to answer, Arlene, because you've been a volunteer coordinator. And I think it depends on if they're either way, whether they're a volunteer or a paid staff member, all hospice workers have mandatory supervision.
Right. So, So if the end-of-life doula is part of the volunteer program, then the volunteer manager would create a specific supervisory checklist, do a site visit on an annual basis, probably do it when people are first starting. That's customized to that unique role, just as volunteer coordinators do for pet therapists, etc. However, if the end-of-life doula is coming under some other branch, say for some reason they're coming in through the social worker department, then in the hospice I worked in, the person who oversees the social workers would be the person doing the evaluation. So because doulas might fit under a couple of different arrangements, if they're paid staff members, then it's going to be someone on the team who's overseeing paid clinical staff that would do the evaluation.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we've mentioned this, but the question did come up. Could the a doula administer medication in the family's absence?
I can answer that one. Since I've deferred.
Well, why don't we all answer? Because we have an attorney.
No, really.
So this is important.
Yeah.
This is very important. I'm going to tell you my opinion, and because we're all here with our opinion, there's no rules, there's no regulations. As an end-of-life doula role, no, that's not part of the end-of-life doula role. That's not in any definition part of that role. However, there are some end-of-life doulas who are also medication aides or nurses or caregivers that have that capability. And as long as they have training by the family that teaches that person, whether it's a nurse or whoever, whatever license they have or don't have, if the family teaches them, then it's up to that person. Do they have the professional liability to do it? Do they have the desire? Do they have all of that? If they are licensed to do that, but that's not a doula role.
Can I chime in?
Alua?
Yeah, gladly. So after 3 years in law school and 10 years practicing law, my brain is constantly looking at possible liability. And for that reason, I do not administer any medication under any circumstances because I'm not covered by the malpractice or liability insurance of the medical team. That's the reason. Not only do the doctors do it very well, I would open myself up to major implications if something happened. And so for that reason, I don't do anything that is not covered by where I'm protected. My insurance myself.
Thank you. Mary Lynn?
That's one of the things that we're working very hard on in the professionalization issue is educating about the doula model of care and the proper roles and staying in your lane and having good boundaries. And I have to say that I think passing meds is a hard rule. No. If you're in the doula capacity, no matter what your other training is, if you were going to pass meds, you'd have to take off your doula hat and put on your nurse hat or medication, you know, giver hat, and not be, you know, working hours as a doula and then just say, well, I'm a nurse, so I can do this. I think that's a confusion of roles and it's not staying in your lane. And I think that can lead to problems. So I would have to agree with Alua on that.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that everybody understands. That's what I'm saying too.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that a doula may also be a person who can, and they have to be clear. Thank you for pointing that out. They have to be clear. They're taking off their doula hat and they're putting on their medication aid hat, whatever. Thank you. Thank
and
you.
And I just want to say, if you are an end-of-life doula under a volunteer program, the answer is no, no way, no how. Just no. There's another comment here that perhaps you ladies would like to address, and that is about, being concerned about how it would be hard if a family member said to a chaplain or a social worker, I feel more comfortable with my doula discussing that. And the comment was, you know, CMS has very clear roles for MSWs and chaplains. So it kind of gets at that, how do we integrate and work as a team and not have that competition? So perhaps you could address that a little bit.
Why don't you all do that, please? If you have something to say, and I will too. These are tricky questions, but I think it's helpful to have each one of our perspective. So go ahead. Does anybody want to take that on first?
I can take a stab at it. So I think it's really important to have really good communication and a spirit of collaboration. I think far too often the problem is not enough attention for a family member in the heat of the moment rather than too much attention. So I think it's really important for people to be talking to each other and be very open to all work together to collaborate to meet the needs of the family.
Thank you. Alua, do you want to say anything to that?
I would 100% agree that when we're keeping the family's needs at the core and we're not thinking about ourselves, then the family's needs can be met and then we need to communicate. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes I've been asked to see how the goals of treatment are working with the client in particular, which means that I talk with my client and then I take information back to the medical care team. And so in that case, the needs are primary.
Okay. And I'll share mine too. I'd like to share is that what I feel is important is in the very beginning when I'm establishing care with a client, I always say, I'm your advocate first and primary. Your loved one who's dying is my first, the primary caregiver second, and the hospice team is third. Do I have your permission to share with the hospice team what goes on? And they always say yes. And the other thing about this issue is I feel like it's important. If a hospice would like the doula to be a PRN employee or be a volunteer and be vetted that way, and that way they're under the same guidelines under everybody, and then the hospice is comfortable, the family is comfortable, so that's another way around. Thank you.
Okay, another question is, how are various cultural issues and practices addressed in doula trainings? Now, I realize there's many doula trainings, but perhaps you could address that, the cultural issues and practices.
Who wants to address that? I would just say yes. I know we do, and I'm sure Mary Lynn and Alua does, right? But does anybody want to get into it a little bit more deeply?
I will talk about cultural humility, that I think it's super important to take everybody where they're at. That's part of leaving your shoes at the door, not making any assumptions, and coming in and asking lots of questions and being guided by the family, and not assuming that because somebody is a member of a certain faith community or from a certain area of the country or looks a certain way or dresses a certain way or is a certain age group that you think you know what it is they need or how they what gives them meaning. It's all about being very humble and not making any assumptions and being very open.
Thank you.
I'll also add briefly as a person of color in this otherwise very white field, is that very often I get calls from people that say, are you the Black doula? We'd like to talk to you. And that is both encouraging and disheartening because it suggests a lack of comfort with other communities. I think part of the benefit of my role in this space right now is to show that these services are available to all and for all. Part of the challenge that we have in trainings is trying to provide as comprehensive information about the different cultures as possible, but there are millions of different cultures. It's very hard to do so. Just because I'm Black does not necessarily mean that I have information about how Black families deal with death and dying. And so to that point, this goes very well to Mary Lynn's point about cultural humility and staying curious about the family that I'm working with, because they might be West African and about my age, also raised in the United States, does not mean I know anything about how they are relating to their death and dying.
Thank you.
So there's also a question about end-of-life doulas who may also be birth doulas. Do we know of people who are on both sides of the scale? And somebody also asked, if you wear both hats, what role can you play? Can you be part of the birth if a child's at risk and helping with a pregnant woman? So speaking of that, you know, I think you got the question. There you go.
Mary Lynn, take that away. Yes, but let Mary Lynn talk about it.
It's really important to have special training in end-of-life issues. So I have known of situations where somebody assumed that because they were a birth doula or postpartum doula that they would be able to help somebody at end-of-life, and they got themselves in trouble because they were in over their head. So there's special training for end-of-life doulas. Having said that, it's very similar work, working with families in transition and using that doula model of care that I talked about. So the way services are delivered is very similar. And a lot of people who are birth or postpartum doulas are drawn to being end-of-life doulas. We have a lot of them in our trainings, and it is very possible to do both at the same time. And there is a huge need for more perinatal hospice workers, people who are comfortable working with children who are dying, pediatric doulas. There's just not enough people who are able and willing to do that work. So anybody who feels called to that, I encourage them to look into doing that.
Can I add to that quickly? And that is the way when Mary Lynn said that just because you're a birth doula and just because the model might be the same in how you engage, that's where it stops. The energy around a death is different than the energy around a birth, unless the baby is going to be dying and people know that. It is a very different ball game altogether. So just because you're good at one doesn't mean you're going to be good at the other. If you're a great end-of-life doula, that doesn't mean you're going to be a great birth doula. So I really value the training for both. Thank you, Mary Lynn.
Okay, so I wanted to just comment, thank you, Karen Jackson. If you're in the chat box, she put a link in for Cleveland Clinic's Diversity Toolkit for those of you looking for diversity. And there's a specific and then a kind of a general question, and that is about doula training programs. One was in a particular state, but one is, you know, how do we find doula trainings? And could end-of-life doulas also train volunteers who are vigil volunteers in hospice? So can you address some training as we're, this should be our last question. We're right at 11:55.
You want to go, we'll just go around. Maybe we'll end with this statement. Maybe we'll end, this will be our ending. So who wants to go first?
Why don't you start so we get it
okay,
in there?
Okay, I'll start. So yes, the trainings are varied, and what we suggest in NHPCO, I answer tons and tons of inquiries about this. The NHPCO, End-of-Life Doula Advisory Council, is not in a position to vet any training programs. We're not in that position yet. What we're doing is educating hospices and palliative care on how to use doulas. So for right now, what I tell people to do is do a Google search, go visit a few of the training places, call them, talk to them, email them, see what kind of program they have, what kind of support. Do a search inside yourself of what do you want to learn right now? Do you want to have a comprehensive thing? Do you want to focus on advanced directives? Do you want to focus on home funerals? Do you want to be in person? Is it okay to be online? Just all of those kinds of things, and then go with your gut. Thank you all. Thank you all for being here. Mary Lynn or Alua?
There, as we're professionalizing, we have come up with some core competencies that we have identified that all end-of-life doulas should be able to meet. Those are published on the nedalliance.org website, the National End-of-Life Doula Alliance. So that helps people vet for themselves a training program. Does that training program meet those core competencies that have been developed by a collaboration of trainers and doulas working together to professionalize?
Alua?
Yeah, just lastly say that it's important to train with somebody you trust. Am I frozen?
Now we can hear you. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, great. I was saying, I think it's wildly important to train with somebody you trust. I get calls all the time with somebody asking, you know, I want to do your course. What do you think? And I start from the beginning. I'm not everybody's trainer. There are a bunch of us doing this right now. It's important that we work with people that we trust. While skills are important, yes, there's a lot of things to learn in doing the work. Relying on our intuition is probably one of the first and foremost. So I suggest that to be as an entry place for selecting a training program. Start with Google, use a gut.
Thank you. Thank you. Arlene, is there anything else you'd like us to end with or that came in at the last minute?
Well, I just think people wanted to know how they could get the slides and the and it is being recorded. So how can people find out more, or if they have additional questions for us, where should they go on the website? For it's the NHPCO. Can you just give them what
yes,
they need to do?
Yes, thank you so much. What I'm going to put up here is this, and that is if you have further questions, there was a long URL that I didn't think anybody would want to sit and write. So if you do Google, then you put nhpco.org, and then in the menu bar, the search bar, you put committees and councils, and then on the left, what will show up is the End of Life Doula Advisory Council, and you can click that. This is a really clear way, and you'll see the different papers that we've presented, and as we continue to create things and bring information from this collaboration, we'll continue to put them up there. The NHPCO will approve everything, and we'll continue to put it up there. And that's a wonderful, like a collaborative effort, and not just any one position. And also, questions and answers. What did you say, Arlene, was the second part?
Let me know if this presentation will and the slides will be available on the site.
Yes. We had a little bit of a technicality in the beginning, so I think I know that when I talked to Beth, we're going to do everything we can to have the presentation, the audio, the video, hopefully in every way available to all the people who wanted to come here today.
Perfect.
And then it'll also be up on a website soon, and Beth will let us know. We'll let you know.
Right. Okay, well, we've gotten a lot of kudos from those who, we want to thank those who listened. We got a lot of high fives and thanks for the information. So to our audience, we're grateful that you tuned in and keep working with us.
Thank you, Arlene. Thank you for manning over 1,200 people. anyway, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you all. We'll keep in touch. And thank you for asking and being here. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.